Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we have two exceptional actors. First, we speak to actor Alan Rickman about his new film, Nobel Son. And then we welcome Mark Margolis to the show. He has two new films in release, Defiance and The Wrestler, this fall. And then the Movie Geeks will review the latest news out of Sundance. It's all coming up next on Movie Geeks United. To a great show tonight, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Jamie and Jerry are here with you. I am Jamie.
I'm Jerry.
And it's great to have everyone aboard tonight. Exciting night. Jerry,
yeah.
How are you feeling about tonight?
I'm feeling really good about tonight because, like you said, we have two exceptional actors. And, you know, I mean, they're both, you know, Mark Margolis, Alan Rickman. I mean, come on. I mean, we see these guys all the time. I mean, these guys are like old standbys. You know what I mean? They're go-to guys. And I mean, Alan Rickman come up from like Die Hard and even before that. But Mark Margolis, I mean, every Darren Aronofsky film, and mm-hmm. yeah, he's the man. And Scarface.
Mark Margolis is the quintessential character actor in that it's one of those actors where they elevate everything they're in.
Yeah.
You can't necessarily place the name, but as soon as you see the face, you know, yes. Yes,
I mean,
he's been in...
watching Pi 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, I know, and that was like, I mean, for him, like a role where he really got to be in his own. So it was good.
That's absolutely
great,
right.
To have him on tonight.
Yeah, a great great collaborator of Mr. Aronofsky, who's just an exceptional director of some of his best films.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be reviewing those tonight with him. That live interview occurs at the half-hour point of this show. We hope we got picked up yesterday on IMDb, our Scarface show, and many thousands of people were able to be introduced to our show probably through the Scarface tribute we just did on Sunday night. If you haven't given that a listen, it's worthwhile to do so if you're a fan of movies and of that movie in particular. A lot of great trivia, a lot of great talk about that film that's become such a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's 25 years. And just
yeah,
another experience.
25 years,
old.
Man. Getting older and older.
That's amazing. Let me tell you guys right off the bat, I know a lot of people are excited about Alan Rickman tonight. What we did was we approached through email a lot of his fan base throughout the web, and there are many, many fans out there of this man for good reason. All over the world, we got and we asked for questions from the fans. We got responses from Germany and all over America and all over the world, and we had 10 minutes with Alan Rickman because this was a press junket. And they just shuffle journalist after journalist in 10-minute increments, and we had a phone conversation with Mr. Rickman. So we were able to get in, even in those 10 minutes, our questions and a couple of your questions. So hopefully you're one of the lucky winners tonight, but I think everyone will enjoy the conversation. It really focuses on his craft and some of his future projects, too, in particular Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, that
mm-hmm.
that just went up a notch in my book. Here you can talk about it. Let me tell you a little flaw that occurred yesterday. A little, what's the word, guffaw or a goof?
We'll just leave it a goof. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, and Jerry, you don't even know about this.
I don't know about this, so...
So I was waiting for him to call in from the hotel where they typically do the junkets. And so they called my cell phone to say, are you all set for Alan? And I said, yeah. And the lady said, I could have sworn this is what she said, we have Eric Ball for it too. Would you like to talk to him as well at the same time as Alan? And Eric Balfour's not in Nobel Sun. So I was very confused. And I said, well, I would love to, but I only have questions for Alan, and the fans have written questions as well, and I'd hate to have him feel left out. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind, not even to mention that he's not even in the movie.
Right.
Yeah. So she kind of paused, and she said, oh, okay, we'll just give you Alan. Come to find out, she was offering me Bill Pullman along with... I don't know. And Bill Pullman sounds nothing like Eric Balfour.
No, I would have made the same.
So I turned down Bill Pullman, which it makes me feel a little bit like an ass. We got to speak to the man himself, Alan Rickman, so that's fantastic.
Well, hopefully Bill Pullman will find it in the heart to forgive us and come back one day.
I pulled Bill Pullman off the show. I pulled man.
Oh, man.
So I'm sorry, guys. Maybe I shouldn't have admitted that.
Because we could have had the Lost Highway retrospective right there.
I tell you what. I think you guys will love this conversation, as brief as it is. And afterwards, I've had the chance to see Nobel Sun, and it opens this Friday in theaters. And I'll tell you guys a little bit about what to expect from that film. But as we've already said, our first guest tonight is one of our finest actors whose career is continuing on into its fourth decade, a career that has been met with tremendous acclaim and success on stage, film, and television, bursting onto the big screen in pictures like Anthony Minghella's Truly Madly Deeply, McTiernan's Die Hard, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. He's continued to produce wildly charismatic and diverse characters in films like Galaxy Quest, Dogma, Love Actually, Sense and Sensibility, and the Harry Potter films. This fall, you can catch him in two films from one of the most exciting new directors, Randall Miller, as Rickman plays the comically arrogant Nobel Prize-winning professor Eli Michelson in Nobel Sun, which is out this Friday, and the snooty wine connoisseur Steven Spurrier in Bottle Shock, which enjoyed a successful release a couple of months ago. In this interview, we discuss his collaboration with Mr. Miller, his feelings on taking on directing duties himself, and his future creative endeavors, particularly his role in Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. Here it is, guys. Enjoy it. I can't tell you how pleased I am to have the opportunity to speak to you. And I did speak to Mr. Miller a couple of months ago in connection to this film and Bottle Shock.
Okay.
And he's obviously crazy about you. And I'm wondering what attracts you to the idea of working with him.
Because... you read the scripts and don't obey any rules, whatever so-called rules of writing are supposed to be, but and his movies resist any labels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, always attractive to an actor, because you know you're only as good as the writing. That much I've learned.
Yeah.
And your imagination won't kick in unless something kicks it. So it's kind of a no-brainer to me, you know. It's like a holiday in a way, or a playground. And you know, you know something must be right, because these great actors are there to work with.
Yeah, yeah, and it is like its own sort of rep company. I mean, you're working with people that you worked with on the previous project with Mr. Miller. And
yeah.
I'm wondering what that does, how that affects the experience of shooting these films.
I think it means that there are all sorts of shortcuts. It doesn't make things necessarily simpler or easier, because, you know, you're talking about actors who are very challenging to work with, and so it should be. You know, you want to work, and it's not like a career move or a soft option. It's just the way actors would like it to be. There's a proper marketplace. It means maybe there are shortcuts in terms of, you know, the absence, the usual absence on a film set of rehearsal. It means you have a kind of shorthand dialogue, which in some ways maybe takes the place of rehearsal.
Sure.
And just try things. it's more improvisational. There's a lot of trust around. I think that actually that would be the most important thing.
Yeah. What amazes me is how different these two movies are, too. Nobel's
Yeah.
Very frenetic.
Totally different rhythms and totally different look and totally different kind of atmosphere and energy to them.
Yeah. And you're playing a real kind of flamboyantly egotistical character in this. You're just terrific in it. And when you read it on the page, did you have an idea right away how you would approach this guy?
Well, I really didn't have a clue, and I got on the plane with not much of a clue either, because the last thing you should probably ever do as an actor is judge your character. Mm-hmm. So it was a question of finding some way to play him without judging him. I always rely on fairly basic instincts, and some instinct made me go to my dentist in London and say, I need you to make me some imperfect front teeth. Because I thought there was something sort of shark-like about his appetites.
Right.
And I needed to feel different and look in the mirror and look different. I thought that would be at least a start to something. And it helped a lot. You know, whether you notice it or not watching the film, I've got these two front teeth that kind of just wrap over each other rather than, you know, being a victim of the great American dentist.
Do you do that often? Do you use kind of external forces to inform kind of the internal life of the character?
Well, not that often, although, you know, the costume is very important to me, and usually that's a slow process, and there's always a discussion with the costume designer, and you know, some characters care about the way they look and others don't, and, you know, sometimes I'm happy to totally hand it over. If you're playing somebody who makes no choices about what they wear, you know, the palette is full of different elements. I guess it just depends. In this case, it was an instinct that I obeyed, and it helped. But I don't usually go for strong. I'm stuck with who I am, basically. And so are you.
Right. And I noticed that there seems to be, maybe I'm incorrect, but this misconception that you don't delve into comedy that often. But, in fact, your resume is populated with comical performances.
I mean, I always think laughter is available. It may not be a joke. It may not be a gag, but the laughter of recognition by an audience, I think, is there, whatever you do. You know, I got quite a lot of laughs when I played Hamlet.
Is that particularly freeing to play a character like this, and is there any danger of taking it too far?
There's always that danger, and that's where you need the director.
Mm-hmm.
Less, you know, is a very useful and quick word for a director to utter.
Right. I had, once we announced that your presence on the show, we were inundated with listener questions. There's a lot of love for you out there. So
thank
I know
you.
We have limited time, so let me get a couple of these off before we have to part. Anne wants to know, I think Anne is from Germany. She's really curious about your directing project. I think it's a movie called The House in Paris and where you are with that.
Well, I now know that I don't shoot the last Harry Potter until the end of next year, so although it starts shooting at the beginning of next year. And so, therefore, there is space. And so, with the stars aligning and all the rest of the finagling that goes to making an independent movie, with luck, we will shoot it next year.
Oh, that would be terrific.
That's the aim.
Yeah. Have you directed, you've directed stage as well?
I just finished directing a play in London at the Donmar Warehouse called Creditors by Strindberg, and that also is due to hopefully have another life in New York next year.
Is there something about directing that kind of completes you in a way that acting alone doesn't, or is it just a natural extension for you?
It's become a very, very different animal. I think it's... I think it's, you know, because I trained at art school and was a graphic designer, it's like pulling all of the elements together. It's not that I prefer one or the other, but it just feels that one's got to a point now where there are certain things about telling a story that you want to hand on, and that the whole business is a bit of a relay race. And, you know, at certain times you find yourself holding a baton,
mm-hmm.
and the job is to pass it on.
Mm.
So it's a question of finding a story that has images jumping off the page that you don't want to act in necessarily, but you would like to talk to a DP about.
Right, right. And John wants to know about, you mentioned your shooting schedule with Harry Potter, but you're also involved in Burton's Alice in Wonderland as well.
Yeah.
Have you already started shooting on that, and tell me about that.
Well, I started. It's a complicated process because some of it's live action, some of it's animation, and some of it's stop motion. And I'm playing the caterpillar, which is animated, but it's my face. So I've done a bit of early work on it where they shot me speaking the lines, so that they've got something to work with, and then they'll go away and spend the next year putting the whole movie together, and then I guess I'll go and record it all again.
Mm.
So, you know.
Yeah. That is interesting. When technology evolves like it has so quickly, it does kind of offer more opportunities, different opportunities for the actor.
When it's in the hands of a complete visionary like Tim, you know, then it's. I'm very happy to be a tube of paint and just hand myself over.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say that the film is fantastic. It's so enjoyable. And you are fantastic at it. Yeah,
I
would imagine so. And I thank you so much for your time. And Mr. Rickman, we're all huge fans of yours. And please come back to us sometime in the future.
Well, I'm an honorary geek, then.
You are.
Thank you.
You'll receive a special plaque pretty soon.
Yeah, I think I'd like that badge. There's honorary geek. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Rickman. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, bye-bye.
Wasn't he great?
That was wonderful. that was an awesome 10 minutes.
Yeah, we tried to fit in as much as we possibly could in 10
he
minutes.
He did a great job. Wonderful job.
Yeah. Thank you. I think we got an exclusive quote on Alice in Wonderland. I haven't heard anyone else talking about this movie outside of when it was first announced. And I had no idea it was a kind of an amalgam of all of those different elements.
Right,
either.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I still don't quite understand. Is his head live action and the rest of him is animated?
I know. It's going to be very interesting.
There's only two things that could pull this off, heavy drugs or Tim Burton. So I think that he could do it. So that's going to be an exciting project.
Yeah.
Nobel Sun, it opens in theaters this Friday, as we said. If anyone saw Bottle Shock, Mr. Miller's previous directorial effort with Mr. Rickman, and it stands in stark contrast to Nobel Sun.
I would imagine.
Completely different tone. This is very frenetic, very energetic. It's about a Nobel Prize winner. He's very arrogant. No one likes him, least of which his son despises him. His son fails to attend the Nobel Prize ceremony in Switzerland because he's being kidnapped and held ransom for $2 million. And, of course, his father doesn't believe him as he calls and pleads for the money until he comes home and finds out that it's a real plot.
Right.
And then the son despises the father so much that he gets in on the plot to swipe the money from the dad. That's all I'll reveal about it, because it's filled with the most colorful characters you can imagine.
Well, like Bottle Shock, then, right? I mean, because Bottle Shock had a lot of colorful characters, too.
Yeah, I mean, the characters are there, the writing is there that you'll recognize from Bottle Shock, but it's for a completely different means.
Okay, cool.
Completely different tone. And I tell you, this is what impressed me most about it, outside of Mr. Rickman's performance, which is just hysterical, and you cannot imagine this movie without him.
Mm-hmm.
What impressed me most about it was it could be the first movie of its kind, post-Tarantino, that does not play like a Tarantino ripoff.
Okay, that's promising.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because every
Yes, I know all too well. I know all too well what you mean.
Every kind of movie filled with flamboyantly colorful characters and murder and cursing and really clever crackling dialogue, it all kind of wants to be Tarantino. And
mm-hmm.
It's Tarantino light.
There is one of those blatantly called, with Tim Allen called, Who is Cletus Tout or something that came out a long time ago that was just so blatantly Tarantino wannabe.
Well, even great films, like the first film that really came out that capitalized on it post Pulp Fiction was Go.
Yeah,
and that's a great film, and lots of people made that comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
I love that film.
It's a great film. So, maybe it's just the effect that Pulp Fiction had on the culture. It's
mm-hmm.
hard to separate yourself from those comparisons, even if they don't exist. But.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great movie, so if it's playing in your area, look it up. Great cast, Mary Steenburgen, Ted Danson, Ernie Hudson. I'm talking about like peripheral characters here played by
And we've interviewed
actors.
Ernie Hudson.
We've interviewed Ernie Hudson and the director, Randall Miller.
Yeah.
Bill Pullman, on and on and on. Alicia, I always mispronounce her name, Eliza Dushku.
She's great. I love her.
Yeah, she's pretty phenomenal in this.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
A great, great cast of characters, played by great actors that are just relishing these roles. So check that out. Also, I wanted to let everyone know, a movie that we've really championed since earlier this year is called Dear Zachary. It's a documentary. It is probably the most cathartic, moving experience that you'll have this year at the movies, or watching a film, certainly in the documentary form. It is actually premiering Sunday night on MSNBC.
Oh, it's going to be on MSNBC. Okay.
MSNBC bought it from the festival circuit. It's still playing in theaters. It's in its fifth week in New York. But it's going to premiere Sunday night on MSNBC, and do watch it. It's such a phenomenal piece of work. Very moving. And a little bit later in the show, speaking of film festivals, we will be giving you all the scoop on Sundance.
For next year.
Yeah, some big news came out today. The films in competition were announced, and it looks like some very promising ones on that list.
Yeah, it does. Some that I've never heard of, which I think is refreshing just because We have talked about a couple of times how the internet has sort of taken all the surprise out, and there's some I've never heard of, so I think it could be a very good year.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, of course, the Golden Globe nominations come
out next Thursday.
Thursday night. Thursday morning. So we'll definitely be conducting a show dedicated to those nominations in the very, very soon. And we got some great shows upcoming. We're dedicating an hour to the film Milk, and we're going to be directing. We're going to be speaking to the director of
the
Academy Award,
Harvey Milk.
Yeah, the Academy Award-winning 1984 documentary on Harvey Milk, The Times of Harvey Milk, and it is an exceptional film. And then we'll be dedicating an hour to Benjamin Button, and we'll have talents from that film on. And we're working on cementing a date for none other than Stormy Daniels.
There you go.
So how can you go wrong there?
I can't go wrong with that. That's the thing I'm looking forward to the most.
I bet you are.
That's the story of my life right there.
I'm sorry, Al Pacino. I just can't talk to you today. I have Stormy
I've
Daniels.
Got Stormy Daniels, and he'll understand.
Yeah, exactly.
He had his chance.
many chances. I do appreciate everyone's participation in the Alan Rickman interview and everyone's input, your questions that you submitted. As you can tell, we had a limited amount of time. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get even a percentage of those questions asked, but he is very friendly and he does feel the love. So that's
important. He was very friendly. I mean, very, very nice and very warm.
Yeah. And he's found himself in this massive franchise with Harry Potter. And I think it's gotten to the point where it's wearing a little thin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sense I'm getting from what I hear from the fans and what I read of him.
Well, it's funny because when they changed that release date for this newest one, I mean, they threw the whole entire thing. The release, everyone was scrambling to, like, the James Bond and Bolt and Twilight. Everyone was scrambling to take advantage of this fact.
Right. Well, it's the behemoth, you know.
Yeah. So next summer we'll, you know, I guess it's the next July is when this Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, I think it's called, will finally come out. So, but it's amazing the huge hole that left open. And everyone took advantage of that to scramble.
It's quite a commitment too. When you sign on from the beginning, as Alan Rickman did. I mean, you know that this is going to be years of your life. You have to leave scheduling open, possibly turn down additional opportunities, because this is a real commitment here.
It is.
It's great to be part of a successful series, but people don't recognize him apparently from Harry Potter. I don't think it's opened up a whole new fan base for him, because he says, you know, I don't walk around wearing a black wig, so people don't recognize me for Harry Potter necessarily. So that was interesting. I haven't really even seen but a couple of those.
What's interesting is the Harry Potter films have, like, I guess the finest actors and actresses of British acting in them who
are
alive right now. That's what they really have. They've given everyone a job.
Yeah. Yeah. Maggie Smith and
Michael Gambon filling in for Richard Harris. So.
Yeah, Michael Gambon. Oh, great actor.
He's incredible.
I remember the first time I saw him, 5 minutes in The Insider.
Yeah.
What a presence.
He's incredible. He is just an incredible actor. Brendan Gleeson's in those. Gary Oldman. God, everyone's in those.
And Mr. Rickman is actually a very accomplished filmmaker himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he directed, I think his directorial debut was The Winter Guest.
That's right, The Winter Guest.
Yeah, and he's very, you know, you can tell he's a stage guy. He, above all things, he appreciates the text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that shows in his choices, and he's just delicious moments in Nobel Sun.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other films up this weekend? What else comes out this weekend?
Well, I would say that's the one that looks most interesting. You have this one with Adrian Brody, Cadillac Records. That I don't know. I don't know. And then you have Punisher Warzone, which I've heard is very good from people. I don't know. It's like, you know, they keep talking about this. They reboot everything. This is like the third reboot. This franchise has gotten.
Why don't they just call it Punisher Reboot?
Punisher Reboot of Reboot.
Do like the Apocalypse Now thing.
But
Punisher Redo.
Well, the very interesting thing about this, I'm not familiar with the guy playing the Punisher, but it does have Dominic West from The Wire.
Yeah.
Who's playing the villain. So, I mean, are these the rewards for The Wire? I mean, I don't know. I mean.
Yeah, I've seen. I saw a trailer the other day for a movie called The Unborn. It's one of those Platinum Dune Michael Bay productions.
Right, yeah, I saw that. Oh, my God, yeah.
Exorcism movie, and of all people, Gary Oldman plays the exorcist. Automatically, I perked up when I saw Gary Oldman.
Well, I always perk up when I see him. I mean, he's great.
Yeah. Speaking of great actors, our friend Chris drew to my attention. Gene Hackman was interviewed, and he says he's never acting again.
I've heard this over the last year. What made him decide this?
He just, you know, he's at an age. He's much older. He's approaching 80. Who's done more movies than Gene Hackman?
He's been in everything.
Yeah, I don't think there's any surprise left. You know, he's quite capable, but. The more advanced you get in your years, I think, in your career and in your life, it has to be worthwhile.
I know it has to be worthwhile, but let me leave you with this, though. Do you really want Welcome to Mooseport to be your swan song?
No, certainly not. I don't think he thinks of it that way.
I just thought I had to bring that up. But.
No, I said the same thing for years. If you look at his resume... Most of his films aren't that great.
No, they're not. He has said as much. He has admitted that he's a working actor like Michael Caine.
Yeah, but you can't name one bad Hackman performance.
True.
He is exceptional in everything, and he's not a chameleon necessarily. He doesn't put on a lot of effects to play a character. He is Gene Hackman, but at the same time, he is completely believable in every performance he gives. You believe him whatever he does.
Right, right.
He's got that gift of natural kind of sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
And he named about 6 or 7 films of his that he considers his shining points in his career. Certainly Crimson Tide is one of those for me.
Right.
I think that that's legendary acting showdown there between
mm-hmm.
he and Denzel Washington.
Right.
And if you think it's a very intense, tightly coiled action thriller made up entirely of conversation.
Right.
That makes you appreciate so much what they did with that movie. And he points out, too, and this is often overlooked, Scarecrow, which
that's
is a
great film.
And he's great in it. Very, very extroverted and colorful in that movie. A stark contrast to another one of his favorites and ours, which is The Conversation,
mm-hmm.
Which exists to be a very muted performance, very interior. And he's capable of both.
Right.
With equal grace. Hackman is one of the greatest actors that we've ever seen on film,
mm-hmm.
certainly.
I agree with that. You're not going to hear any complaints from me on that. What else did he consider?
What else did he what?
What else did he consider when he talked about his performances? I'm just curious. What other films?
Oh, there's the French. There's the French Connection.
Right.
And he's actually retired in favor of writing historical books.
That's right. I know he's written
yeah.
a couple actually.
He's written 3. So he's still got the creative juices flowing. It's just I hope something comes across his desk that just convinces him to get back.
He's got screen presence. He's always had screen presence. And I know the writing of the books, it's very much what Sterling Hayden did. Sterling Hayden, he also had the book because he was blacklisted, but he wrote books as well about naval fiction. But
In a little bit, I'll tell you the 2 greatest acting lessons that you can find yourself on YouTube right now, and one of them involves Gene Hackman. Our next guest is on the line.
Okay, wonderful.
And we're very excited about speaking to him. Just listen to these. Scarface, I Shot Andy Warhol, Absolute Power, The Thomas Crown Affair, Flawless, Gone Baby Gone, and Darren Aronofsky's Pi, Requiem for a Dream, The Fountain, and The Wrestler. These are just a few of the feature film credits of our next guest, Mark Margolis, who has delivered a slew of outstanding performances in some of our generation's most memorable films. He's crafted a profound legacy on the small screen as well, where he's tackled recurring characters on hit shows like The Equalizer and Oz. We are tremendously pleased to welcome Mark Margolis to Movie Geeks United. Mr. Margolis, hello.
Hello. Now, do I thank everybody that helped me get to this point?
You can do whatever you'd like, sir. Welcome. It's a pleasure to have you.
I don't know. You're very flattering. I've also done a lot of messy work here and there.
Oh, no. You have been...
No, not at all. Not at
you
all.
You have been involved in some fantastic projects.
Yeah, I have. I've been lucky. I've been in some very good films.
And I want to talk about some of these films, including the 2 latest big screen releases that you got going on. But give me a sense of when the acting bug first bit you. When did that notion first enter your mind?
It's a weird thing. When I was a kid in Philly, I grew up in Philly,
mm-hmm.
I was sitting with somebody, and we had been talking for a long time. I had sort of thought about acting at one point, and then he was talking about, let's become radio announcers. We used to listen to a lot of radio. This was back in the dark ages. And then we went from that to let's become actors. And I thought, yeah, that's what I'd like to do. And he didn't go any further with it. And I said something to my father and ended up, he said, well, why don't you go look into it? And I went downtown in Philly to the Bessie V. Hicks School of Dramatic Arts. I was about 14.
Wow.
Apparently, I think I found out she's some well-known actress from either silent film days or something like that?
Huh.
You're the film buffs. Do you know of Bessie V. Hicks?
I will by the next show. I will,
yeah,
I'll do
well,
my research.
I'll definitely look
I don't know. I mean, it could be theater. It could be theater.
Right, right.
I don't know.
But, was there something? What did acting hold for you? What did it do for you?
I'll try to be. I don't. The best I could say is there were so many things. I was kind of shy about many things and a bit held back. And what it has for me, it still has for me. It allows me to do things that I on my own would never do because I have license from the
mm-hmm.
author to do this or that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm on some level. I'm free of being responsible for doing that, and I can do it. And and then if I really get into it, I can do it fully. And it's very, it's a great release because it's something I could never have done. And not always, but that was one of the great things of it.
Yeah, yeah, and you did.
And it seemed a good way to meet girls.
Well, that's always important.
That is the most important thing right there, and that's a constant thing I've heard my whole life about it.
Especially, well, if you're a shy person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, that's just riffing, but
yeah. I mean, I'm considering the acting career myself for that very reason.
Well, it seems that everybody. I get stopped every day on the street by somebody asking me how do I get in that acting business.
Right.
And then I say, what do you do? And they say, I work for the city comptroller. And I say, well, how do I get in that comptroller business? It makes me great. Well, because I don't think people walk up to violinists with the orchestra and say, how do I get mm-hmm. in that violin business? But everybody thinks they can be an actor.
Right.
Also,
right.
A lot of people think because they can construct a sentence that they're writers.
That is true.
Well,
that's true.
That sadly is something that's very true. Because, especially with the internet, that's very true.
You studied with Stella Adler.
She was my great teacher. I mean, when I came to Philly, I went to a year of college in Philadelphia and then was involved with the theater department, even though I was thinking about going into something else. I had done some plays in Philly. And after I didn't care for the theater department that much, though. The school I went to now has a wonderful, apparently, theater department, but that was a long time ago. And I came to New York to see what the great teachers were like, and I actually had never heard of her. My family, apparently, later I found out, all knew about her. And I had an interview with her with a buddy of mine. We drove in from Philly for the day, and the main thing that hit me was if God is a woman, this is him.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
And Stella taught more than what it was to be more than acting. She taught what it was to be an artist in the world.
Right.
She was quite incredible, and I was scared to death of her for quite a long time.
We've heard that time and time
mm-hmm.
again from
yeah.
some of the guests we've had on the show that studied under Stella.
Well, initially, I mean, I was a 19-year-old kid from Philly, which I really had never. New York itself was pretty overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole other place. I got used to her later. In fact, I traded classes by assisting her getting home and helping her when she got to her apartment. I checked coats at her parties a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you studied with Stella, and what became the first break for you that you considered your first break?
I was with Stella for about 3 years, though the course was about two, but I was afraid to break the umbilical cord, so I went a little further. Very quick, when I was in Stella's, I wrote that gets too involved.
I love hearing stories about craft and about training. So whatever
you
want to say,
please.
Here.
What?
You're in good company here. If you want to,
whatever you'd like to say and share with us.
You had Alan Rickman on before me, right?
Just yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I was thinking that's a hard act to follow unless you're Ray Fine. If you're Ray Fiennes, it's cool. But for me, he's quite an incredible actor. I saw him on the street once about a year ago in Soho, and just the guy, I realized who it was as he went by me, and he was an incredibly impressive looking creature, man,
oh, yeah.
Person.
Yeah, I bet.
But he's
very,
a wonderful actor.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful actor. Anyhow, to go back to the thing, a few months outside, out of Stella's, I got into a Broadway play called Infidel Caesar, which was Julius Caesar, Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, set in Cuba.
Hmm.
They made these Caesar was Castro, Che Guevara was Mark Antony. There was an idealist in the Cuban Revolution who a lot of people don't know about, or they say he was named Cienfuego, who blew up in a plane on a trip to Miami right after the revolution succeeded, and he was Brutus, and they had these movie stars in the play. Brutus was John Ireland. Do you remember John Ireland?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Which was a real wow for me, because I had a good part. I was Casca in it. The conspirators met on the banana docks of Havana. All the funeral orations were given from jeeps. We were all in military fatigues. The soothsayer was a Haitian voodoo doctor. It folded after a week or two of previews. People thought it was kind of off the walls, though I think not. Ramon Navarro, the first Ben-Hur
from
silent film days, was one of the senators. They brought him into the play just so that they would attract all the middle-aged ladies or older ladies who had been fans of his.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in about 1961. So that was the first thing. And then nothing happened after that, after it folded, and I got I wasn't getting any work, and the 60s came along, and I kind of drifted away from it for a while and got involved with art galleries that friends of mine were building in what became Soho later, and then started my own theater company because I couldn't do very much. As a result of my involvement with the art galleries, I created these giant plastic structures that filled whole, what would be the size of a gym in a university. And I created plays to fit in them, very weird things with tape recorders talking. I had a company and we toured colleges all around the country through the later 60s, mid-60s on into the early 70s. And I did the whole thing, created all this stuff, then got weary of it and just remembered I had just wanted to be an actor. And somewhere about 1972 or 3, I went to Lee Strasberg because this was the guy Stella hated most. I wanted to see what he was about.
Yeah.
And I was at Strasberg's for about 2 years. And actually after that, I started working. Sometimes I wonder, though. I mean, I have friends who became very successful out of Stella's. A roommate of mine, one of the great actors of America, Anthony Zerbe. I spent a year rooming with him. He got very successful very quickly out of Stella's. I think he was more focused. I kind of got lost in the 60s revolution.
Right.
Even did light shows with a group called Pablo's Magic Theater. They used to do light shows at the Fillmore East and all kinds of other places.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, I hope I have a couple of questions just on a craft level. I hope that it's not this first one isn't too vague. You've obviously been acting for a long time. You've been in the business a long time. Have you noticed, just from observation, how has the craft of acting and the level of performance evolved over the years? Have you noticed it evolve in a way?
That's a hard one to answer. I mean, I came into the world of where Marlon Brando had turned everything around.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that I came to Stella in 58, 59. And the great things to the young ones of us were either Brando or Kazan.
Right.
You want it to be in the actor's studio, not because of Strasberg. You want it to be in the actor's studio because Kazan was at the actor's studio.
Mm-hmm.
So what has I don't know what's evolved. I mean, at best, there are some actors out there that do marvelous, understated, simple work. I often envy them. There are a lot of people who are smart enough to know what to do, but there's not a lot happening. There are people that have certain, you know, because Brando made everybody believe that being very naturalistic, et cetera, whatever you would call it, that's a wrong word. A lot of people in my youth got hung up on, like, that Brando was all about torn T-shirts, which he wasn't. He had done some very classy things in the theater when he was around Stella. And later, even in movies. So I see a lot of actors who do a certain kind of shtick that passes for being very natural. Natural is what I meant, not naturalism. You know, they'll talk, you know, they'll take a toothpick. And I don't think this is what you're talking about, though, in terms of the evolution. I see what I'm really taken with is there are some actors that seem very, very smart nowadays, even smarter than what I observed when I was younger. They seem to be.
What does strike me, I think there's two parts of this question, in that an actor's possibilities are limited by the imagination of the writer to a large extent. And I think that, to a large extent, the writing has really kind of decreased in quality over the years for films.
I interrupt a lot. I never felt like I was limited by the imagination of the writer, that I have my own imagination to go much further with it. I actually always used to... It's a wrong thing to say, but, you know, there's this thing, especially in the theater, they say the actor serves the playwright. I always thought secretly inside bullshit, I serve myself. But I don't mean it that way. Stella used to say, and very truly so, that brilliant playwrights, like she'd talk about Chekhov, were very, on some level, they were easier to do than the lousy playwrights because they gave you everything. Now, whether you're capable of doing the everything they give you is another story, which is what makes Chekhov not so easy for a lot of people to do. But they do give you everything. So, I don't know. I mean, I've been in things that were... I didn't think much of them, but I found some way to do something with them for myself that made it better than what was there or what was given to me by the author.
Yes, sir.
Not that often. It's more often been something that I thought was not too terrific, but I needed to do it because I had bills to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Let's get into your new films in just a second because I'm anxious to talk to you about them. But very quickly, I know you're probably asked about this film a lot, and you're probably sick of it, but I'm going to be the millionth person to ask you about it. Scarface, the experience of shooting that, because Mr. Pacino is kind of an idol of ours on this show. Can you tell me anything about the experience of acting across from him and what you kind of took from that experience?
I think I came to it determined not, you know, just to be with this other actor. I found one of the wonderful things about him was he was another actor.
Mm-hmm.
I think we went into his trailer once to work on a scene because he wasn't sure what he wanted to do with it. I don't know at the time, I thought it was a wonderful thing. I loved getting into it. No one knew it was going to be the incredible success it's been, though. At the time it opened, it kind of semi-bombed.
Yeah.
The critics were down on it. I remember going to the opening night. They had a big opening night screening up on Broadway. And I remember about, as the movie went, a few, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, there were like dozens of people walking out on it.
Yeah.
I kind of cringed down behind my seat. But I thought he was a wonderful actor to work with.
Right.
I kind of enjoyed F. Murray Abraham equivalently. I was around him and Paul Chenard, who unfortunately passed away, who was lovely. Al turned to Murray one day and said, "What's cocaine really like?" I swear he said that. I don't know. I think Al, when he was younger, may have been a guy who drank.
Right, right.
I don't know what he knows about it. I'm sure he knows more about it than I do, at least in terms of researching his part. I was not a cocaine snorter in the movie.
He obviously thought that F. Murray Abraham knew something about.
But Murray's very witty. Murray said this line. Maybe you've heard it, but it was the first time I ever heard. Murray said, "Coke makes you feel like a new man. The only problem is, 20 minutes later, the new man wants to feel like a new man."
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great line.
It really is.
I'll tell you one interesting thing about Pacino.
Please.
That'll give you some idea of where he's coming from, though I recently read that he's not so into this anymore, which made me feel better, but I'll get to the point. I was sitting in the car with him. You know the major car scene where we see the diplomat get in the car and we follow it. I'm gonna blow the bomb, and he shoots me in the head. So we were waiting in the car while they set up the diplomat and his wife getting into the car, and this went on forever. We seemed to be in the car for like about an hour and a half, just sitting. It was near Tudor City, which is one of the only things we did in New York. Everything else was done at Universal in L.A.
Yeah.
And only a drop in Florida. They got right out of Miami because the Cuban community was upset about the image. Anyhow, the two other guys were sitting in the back, Angel Salazar, the tiny guy who's still fighting at the end. Do you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the guy who played Ernie, the bodyguard, who he took on when he shot Robert Loggia. Anyhow, Al started talking. In fact, he was doing most of the talking in the hour and a half we were sitting there. And I remember him saying, "You know, if we put all our faces together, we might come up with one good-looking guy out of the four of us if we use different features." And he went on and on and on and on and on. And a lot of what he was saying was fucking lame. And I'm thinking, gee, this is like being back in the locker at Lincoln High School in Philadelphia. This is what I wanted to escape. It's like talking to jocks all day or something. And it went on and on. Then all of a sudden it dawned on me, this is not Al Pacino talking. This is Tony Montana talking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was what was happening for him. Now, recently I heard him in an interview where he said he feels much more secure nowadays and he doesn't have to be 24/7 into the character he's playing. He can leave it and come right back to it when they call the actors together, which made me feel a lot better because as I've gotten older, I used to do things where I once played Dracula in something, and I used to hang around in a tree up on a campus of a regional theater, a college theater, looking at people walking across the campus and thinking who I was going to bite in the neck. If they had caught me up the tree, I would have been arrested. This was in the evening, but I used to get into these things.
Yeah.
And nowadays I don't so much, so when he said that, I felt a little bit vindicated. But I do remember this thing in the car, and when it hit me, I was very taken with the fact that he was just going to stay with Tony Montana until De Palma came over for us to, you know, or gave the word for us to start up.
Yeah, we've spoken to De Palma and Stephen Bauer both about Scarface, so we're obviously very crazy about that film, as many people are. But let's get to your new films, and I'm fascinated by a kind of recurring collaboration that you have, and that is with Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah.
He's had me in all four of his films. I think it's because he figures any guy that can sit around contemplating pi to the nth.
But that was such a great film, and we loved you in that film.
I loved me in that film, but I've not done anything that large. I had a decent-sized part in The Fountain and a small part in Requiem. This one, is an incredibly gorgeous film. I have two scenes, but I almost don't exist in the film. It's the way Darren works, where things that are unimportant he doesn't stay with, and I merely have one minor thing. I'm the guy who runs the trailer park that Mickey lives in,
okay.
And I have one scene where he's yelling at me about locking him out, and I say, you know, I can't help you, and I go into my trailer, and I have another scene that's from 500 feet back where... I'm unlocking the trailer and letting him in while counting my money, but you almost don't know. And yet Darren gave me the fourth end credit, which is very gracious, but it's almost embarrassing. Some guy that came to the New York Film Festival to see the screening of The Wrestler said to me, I really thought you were wonderful in it. And I said, well, if you liked me in that, you must have loved me in No Country for Old Men, which I'm also not in. I mean, Darren graced me with that. You know, there isn't much, but it's a gorgeous movie. It's like Mickey's incredible. It's on some level. I was thinking recently, there's something about this movie. When you see, have you seen it?
No.
Not,
I'm looking forward, counting down the days.
Well, it's you'll probably think I'm crazy when you see it, but lately I began to think that it's not quite, but on some in some parallel universe, it's an American La Strada with Mickey Rourke as Zampano. Wasn't that what Anthony Quinn was called? Zampano?
I think so. Yes, I think so.
Well, there's something about that. Anthony played the muscle man, and they traveled. I mean, Mickey's got a van he practically lives in that he moves around, and it has something of La Strada in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I always sum it up.
It's important you bring that up because, I mean, Aronofsky has a visual flair to him unlike any other filmmaker of his generation. He has something unique in all his films, and he touches on things in directors. And in this case, you bring up Fellini, and I believe that because he has a lot of influence. If you watch The Fountain, there's like a lot of Werner Herzog in that and a lot of other great things.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a beautiful film.
He had I was involved with The Fountain from way back when he was first going to do it in Mexico and then
right.
Australia, and then we ended up 20 below zero up in Montreal doing rainforest scenes. But originally it was a much more involved script. It's got a great complexity to begin with, but I think some things would have worked for some people better who had problems with it if he had been able to do though he did gorgeous things considering what he got cut back to.
Yeah, I mean, when Brad Pitt, dropped out.
Well, they took a lot of his money away.
Yeah, and I hated that. I hated him for doing that, but I still think it's a beautiful, very underrated
film. Well, they
took
a lot of his money away when he went with Mickey. I say took a lot. There wasn't a lot of money to be had when he went with Mickey, and he did something gorgeous here.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is basically the story of a man who cannot live without what he loves doing, even though he's been told by experts that it's going to kill him if he continues.
Right. And it's taken a lot of his life away from him at the same time.
Yeah, but it's got some beautiful, witty things that Mickey is is very beautiful and subtle in it. And the women are quite incredible in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Both the lover and the daughter.
Yeah, they fantastic actresses.
And there's a comic in it who's quite wonderful as the guy who runs the deli that he. There's some deli scenes that are marvelous. By the way, Darren's parents are always put into the films too. They're in background.
Oh really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let me ask you about Defiance. Now, this is an Ed Zwick movie, and Ed Zwick is known for making very exciting kind of action pictures in spirit, but they always have a socially conscious theme.
Yeah.
And tell me about this project and what attracts you.
By the way, I had a one-line thing in Glory way back.
Yes.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I was originally supposed to do two scenes. I went down to Georgia, and he said, well, the writer decided to do that last week because the writer was also an actor. I was going to leave, but he asked me to stay, so I did it. Mm. But it ain't much. This movie, I got a trip to Lithuania, which was incredible. So,
wow. Wow.
We were in Vilnius, in the old town, in the city of Vilnius, in the old town section. So it was quite an incredible place to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's also got a long history that some of which I had family members that were involved in. But this is another incredible story. You know, it's a true story.
Yes.
It's a really fascinating story. About four guys that were pretty tough guys before the Nazis got there and weren't about to put up with the bullshit when they got there.
Yeah.
I don't know. By the way, am I allowed to say words like
you
that?
You can say whatever you'd like.
Whatever you want.
I don't want you to get fined $500.
No, we're not going to. No one fines us. Not yet, at least.
So I can also expose my left breast.
That's right.
You can do that. Sure. Sure thing.
That's right. No FCC here.
Not yet.
I want to congratulate you, too, because it was just announced today, another film that you're involved in. Actually, Jerry.
Adam.
You know,
Adam
is in competition at Sundance this year.
Oh, really?
That was a beautiful story.
I have a tiny part in that. You know, my joke on the street, some people stop me on the street, and they say, I've seen you in movies, and I usually say, and there's some truth in this, yes, I have 1 minute in everything.
You know, but small part, large part, you are one of the great character actors.
Yeah.
And
I told my mother said to me I was a great character actor, and I said, no, Mom, I am not a character actor. I am a weird-looking romantic lead. I always think that on some level every actor is a character actor, but I know what you're saying.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. But you elevate anything that you're in.
Well, Darren once said to me when he saw the movie A Dinner Rush,
mm-hmm.
you know that movie?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Which all takes place in a... Darren said, you didn't do any acting in that movie, you were just yourself, because Darren always sees me as miserable, and I was kind of nasty and miserable in that movie. You know, a funny thing with Darren... he's very witty with me. He's, by the way, when you talk about what an incredible director he is, and I don't know as much as you guys know about film and, you know, what influences me. What I always like about Darren that gets to me that I find different than any other director is he's very spare in what he chooses to keep and show you. And my best example is, you said you're big on the film Pi.
Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in Pi on a subway where Sean Gillette is sitting there, the main guy,
mm-hmm.
across from a man who's reading a newspaper and humming, I think. The man with the newspaper, the back of the newspaper has the whole stock page, and Sean wants to see it. And he gets all worked up and goes over and grabs the newspaper from the guy without saying anything. Darren never shows you the guy's reaction, whether the guy was angry, scared, amused, whatever, because it's not important.
Yeah, it seems not
how the guy, you know, you can, you, in other words, use your imagination
right.
to, and he does that in a lot of places where he
less
sticks
is more.
With
yeah.
what's incredibly important. Any other director would do a reverse and show you the guy's reaction
right.
to the newspaper. To Darren, that's of no importance. Mm. Since the guy didn't, you know, hit him over the head with a piece of wood, then it would be. But it doesn't matter whether the guy was scared or angry or whatever.
Yeah.
When I was up in Montreal and we were doing this rainforest scene in this ancient factory building that was about a mile long, and it was freezing in there, and it took days and days and days to do this one little rainforest thing where I get my head cut off or whatever, and I fall in the mud, and they were pouring ice-cold water on me. Oh. And at one point I muttered into the body mic I was wearing, it would really kill you to get a heated tanker truck. the next day when we continued, because I was freezing, the next day when they continued it, there was a heated tanker truck of warm water coming out of the rain that was falling. And I went up to Darren and I said, that was very nice of you to do that. He said, I would never do anything. I'm not going to spend money like that on that. Mm-hmm. Somebody else decided to do it.
Oh, that's great. Mr. Margolis, we are crazy about you, and we welcome you back on the show anytime you want.
Yeah, anytime.
Thank you. Thanks
very much. Thank you so much. You have a good evening.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. That is Mark Margolis. What a great talent and a great personality, great interview.
I just wanted to add something just about Scarface. Yeah. When he said, like, people walked out of Scarface, like, at the premiere. Like, a lot of people walked out of The Wild Bunch, out of Taxi Driver, and, you know, Wes Craven walked out of Reservoir Dogs because he couldn't handle it. So I've always found that fascinating. These movies that have endured are the ones that people, like, walked out of.
Yeah, that were just a little too daring for their time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. In a way, that's understandable. That's a great Defiance and The Wrestler. Check them out. They're both films that are on the tops of critics' lists and certainly movie fans' lists.
Yeah,
as well.
Especially The Wrestler. They're all. I mean, this is everything. All eyes are on The Wrestler right now because this Mickey Rourke's performance is just out of this world.
I'm telling you, that's going to be the moment when he picks up the Best Actor Oscar.
Yeah, I
don't want to jinx it, but.
Oh, God, don't jinx. Actually, maybe we shouldn't have said that, because if he doesn't get it, I'm afraid he's going to come beat the living shit out of us.
Yeah, we don't want that. Okay, Jerry, you have it up there.
I have it up
Sundance
there. Let me get to it. Like I said earlier at the start of the show, I don't know a lot of these films, and I actually think for once that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, because I think the Internet has kind of spoiled me at least the last 12 years, because they sort of know everything, the moment from inception to, the moment the deal's been made, to read about a variety online. And I'll be very honest with you, I don't know a good chunk of these films. Now, one of them that we mentioned that our guest, as he said, has a small part in is Adam. And let me see if I can get a description of that for us.
I actually think that's a good thing. At Sundance, because the whole complaint about Sundance as of late has been that they're just another Hollywood machine.
Yeah.
Look,
they're even on Entourage, remember?
But more than that, they're playing Hollywood movies, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And the independent that spends all of their money on a camera and the time to get a film done, the spirit in which that festival was started seems to have dissipated. But this year, there's a tremendous amount of diversity in the
there is. That's what they said. There's no central theme, I think, is what the festival director had said earlier, that there's nothing. It's a wide open field. Now, this film, Adam, which is written and directed by Max Meyer, has Hugh Dancy, Rose Byrne, Peter Gallagher, Amy Irving, Franken Faison, and Mark Margolis, and Marklyn Baker. And that's going to have its world premiere there. But like I said, a lot of these things just don't ring a bell, and I think that's wonderful. There's some things. I'm just going to read off a couple things, and I don't know if you have the page open or not.
I'm about to get to it.
If you want, I'll put it in
tonight.
The chat room. If you want, I can put the link in the chat room if you'd like. I'll go do that right now. But there's going through, there's a documentary about William Kunstler. There's also one called Reporter, which is about the New York Times op-ed columnist Nicholas DeKristoff, who, and about his crusade about Africa, especially Darfur, and his whole campaign there, and his bringing awareness to really the whole world in America about what's going on there, and that just struck my eye. I was like, wow, that sounds really interesting. Cause
there's two documentaries that they have there that interested me particularly. In one was the director of Living in Oblivion, Tom DeCilio.
He has a lot of films that have come out since then that not many people know.
But his new one is actually the first feature-length documentary on The Doors.
That's right, and I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. I thought that was fascinating.
That should be great, because I don't think I've ever seen a documentary about them. I've read plenty about them, but I can't wait to see that. that looks
containing a ton of footage only between the years of 66 and 71. So this is going to be an interesting film. And there's another one about, it chronicles a young man's life and his mental illness and his death from mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all filmed by his mother.
Well, that sounds very emotional. I don't know if
yeah.
I'm going to be able to sit through that one.
I mean, that sounds like this year's Dear Zachary.
And that does, yeah. I was just going to say that.
Dear Zachary. And that one's called Boy Interrupted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that yeah, that one, I was reading about that one, too, earlier.
And the Doors one is called When You're Strange.
And there's another one on here that sounds really interesting, and it's called Sergio, and it is about the gentleman at the UN who I remember when he died in the bombing in Baghdad in Iraq. This is, I think, 2004, but he was the Sergio Vieira del Mello, the High Commissioner for Human Rights at the UN, and that's about his life, and that should be fascinating. I think Samantha Power just wrote a book about him. So, yeah, I mean, there's really a lot of stuff I just don't know.
And you know, in film festivals, I tend to gravitate towards the documentaries because these are the films that have the most to benefit from a film festival in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just fascinating. I love the documentary form, and film festivals bring them out more than anything else. And look at this variety. There's a movie called Dirt the Movie,
mm-hmm.
an examination of how humans are spoiling the resource, the natural resource of dirt. There's a movie called Good Hair,
which follows
Chris Rock as he explores the culture of African American hair. There's the September issue, which follows a Vogue editor as they're preparing the publication of their big fashion issue every year.
Yeah,
just slices of life that you don't get. There's a new film from Joe Berlinger, who is one of our fantastic documentary filmmakers.
He's great. I really enjoy his films.
It's called Crude, and it's about
that's going to be very. That should be very interesting.
Chernobyl and the Rainforest
mm-hmm.
kind of story. But and then they announced their feature films, too, their dramatic competition. There's some interesting ones here. There's some ones with some big stars in them. There's one called 5 Minutes to Heaven.
Yeah, that one I was looking at. What's the other one?
Liam Neeson. There's one with The Greatest. Is that what I'm thinking of?
The Greatest, yeah. The Greatest. Where is that on here? Let me look now, because I was reading that one earlier, too. And
I don't see it on this list. I don't know why I don't, because it's up. But that's a Pierce Brosnan film.
Yeah, The Greatest. Here we go. By Shana Fist. After the tragic loss of their teenage son, the family is again thrown into turmoil by the arrival of a young woman. Pierce Brosnan, Susan Sarandon, Carey Mulligan, Johnny Simmons, Aaron Johnson, and Mike Shannon. That has a lot of potential too.
Now this is interesting because last year's Sundance Festival, there was a couple of filmmakers I wanted to get to, but we were unsuccessful at it. But the one that I was most interested in, we did get her, and I think we got like one of the first interviews with her, and that was Zinovich, the director of the Roman Polanski Wanted and Desire documentary.
Right.
It's a
great documentary.
Great documentary. You know, just fascinating.
And did you hear he wants to, he's trying to get that thrown out now.
That's exactly what I was about to say. As a result of that film and the evidence that she was able to uncover from that film, he has filed a motion to dismiss the sexual misconduct charges that have been pressed against him for over 30 years, which would allow him to return to the U.S., Roman Polanski. So let's see how that pans out.
I'm very curious to see what will happen with that.
Because
that documentary, was very even-handed. So I was like, wow. Should we talk about the Spirit Awards?
Sure.
Okay. A couple of that films I've seen, Rachel Getting Married and another one, Frozen River, have a lot of nominations. But there's also another film that only played in my area for a week and left. Ballast, I think it's called.
Ballast
got a lot of nominations. And, we got the Golden Globes next week. Charlie Kaufman's film is going to get the Robert Altman Award this year.
Hmm.
And I think it's deserving of that because it has an incredible cast. I mean, it's got a huge cast, so I think, you know, for that it's deserving. It's a good film. You think about it a lot. I don't know what else it's up for, but it's Charlie Kaufman. So let me read you the best feature nominees, though. Rachel
sure.
Getting Married, The Wrestler, Wendy and Lucy, which just sounds too bleak for me to watch. I was reading about that the other day.
I think I'm about to see that, actually.
Dude, I don't know if I can sit through that, given
yeah,
the subject matter. I don't know.
I think I'm getting that in the mail sometime in the next week.
I don't know if I'll be able to watch that. Ballast.
It's got raves.
No, it's got raves. But you know what it's about?
No, I don't want to know.
Oh, you don't know? I've read about it, I was like, I don't know if I can really sit through that. And Frozen River.
If it's depressing, I love it.
Okay. I just don't. All right. And Frozen River, which is very good. So I've actually seen like two of the films on here, which is nice.
Right.
The director, Tom McCarthy for The Visitor, Jonathan Demme for Rachel Getting Married, Courtney Hunt for Frozen River, Raman Barani for Chop Shop, which I still haven't seen, and Lance Hammer for Ballast.
That's another dark horse for an already crowded Best Actor category of this year's Oscars, too, is Richard Jenkins.
Oh, yeah, and he's and speaking. Let's see, what else do well? Yeah, let's go to best screenplay. Woody Allen for Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Very well deserved. That's one of the great Woody Allen movies, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now here's one that was surprised me. Howard A. Rodman for Savage Grace.
Huh.
That's,
for screenwriting?
Yeah, for screenwriting.
Huh.
No,
I did see that.
Yeah, you saw that. You told me to stay away from it, but.
unless you enjoy really explicit incest, which you may.
Yeah, I just don't know. It depends what kind of mood I'm in. Christopher Zala for Sangre de mi Sangre. Charlie Kaufman for Schenectady. Is that how you, I always, Schenectady?
Schenectady, yeah.
New York. And Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck for Sugar, which I don't even know if that opened here or not. Now, the best first screenplay, we have Dustin Lance Black for Milk, Lance Hammer for Ballast, Courtney Hunt for Frozen River, Jonathan Levine, who we've interviewed, for The Wackness.
Yeah, for The Wackness. Yeah,
and Jenny Lamette for Rachel Getting Married.
Oh, very good.
So we have a couple, you know, this is very interesting.
I think it's safe to say that's Black's, but that's a good category. There's some strong nominees there.
There are. And the best female leads. I'll do the best female and best male leads. Best female lead, we have Summer Bichelle for Towelhead. Anne Hathaway for Rachel Getting Married, Melissa Leo for Frozen River, Tara Riggs for Ballast, and Michelle Williams for Wendy and Lucy. That's a very strong category right there. Best male lead, Javier Bardem for Vicky Cristina Barcelona, Richard Jenkins for The Visitor, Sean Penn for Milk, Jeremy Renner for The Hurt Locker. Has this even opened yet?
No, we talked to Renner in connection to Neoned, and we talked a little bit about Take to the Mini Driver film you did.
Yeah, but I mean The Hurt Locker, though.
Talk about The Hurt Locker.
Yeah. And Mickey Rourke for The Wrestler. So, I mean, that's another strong category right there.
Even though the outcome is probably a given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a given. But I think that's those are announced the night before the Oscars.
Yes, they are. They actually occur during the day.
Yeah.
They occur at a beachfront in a tent in Santa Monica or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is in Santa Monica. It's, I think, right near the pier or something, if I'm not mistaken. Those are very strong.
If the Golden Globes were cool, they'd be the Spirit Awards.
Yes, they would.
Yeah,
I think the Golden Globes will be better than they were last year. Anything would have been better than last year.
I remember one year watching the Golden Globe Awards. Nell Carter came on to sing the opening song. It was one of those songs that were structured around a pre-existing hit or something.
Right.
And she was singing lyrics related to all the movies, and she was making sure to sing all the actors' names and point to them. And there was such embarrassment in the crowd. I mean, that's right up there with Rob Lowe and Snow White at the Oscars.
That's right. That's, I remember that. Oh,
I mean, I put those in the same category, really. Well,
Oh my! Oh my!
But there is singing in the Spirit Awards, but it's actors doing a really funny sing along to all the Best Picture nominees.
Okay. Wow.
Have you watched the Spirit Awards?
Only sometimes. I haven't watched them in the last couple of years, but since we do have IFC again, I'll definitely try to take a look this year, for sure. It should be very interesting. I mean, you got a lot of great talent nominated, so.
Also in Oscar news, Ricky Gervais was asked about the possibility of hosting the Oscars this year. I don't know if you read this.
I didn't know.
He said, if I did it, I'd have to be allowed to go way over the top. And I don't think that they want that. So he's thinking, they haven't asked, but I know that I'm on the short list, and I don't think they'll ask for that reason. And they probably won't now that they've heard his quote.
Right.
But yeah, so that's an interesting little Oscar tidbit.
I think Stephen Colbert would be great, but I don't know if they'll do that.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, you started Jason O'Brien. You're trying to take all the Oscar news away from Jason.
It was intentional. And the short list of the documentary foreign film features that are up for awards, our man Amin Mataka is up for Captain Abu Rayyad. I can't say that word. And we've had him on several times. And I think
that would be great. That would be incredible.
I've heard a lot of things about this Walking with Bashir.
The Waltz with Bashir is supposed to be incredible.
Yeah, but I want Mataka to win. And this would be, if he won, this would mark the second year in a row that we've had an Oscar winner on our show.
That's right.
From that year,
mm-hmm.
promoting the film that they won for. That would be great.
That would be incredible.
See Oscar top that.
Oh, great.
But I find myself invested in a very unique way in the Oscars like I've never been before, because when I knew that we had the Peter and the Wolf guy on the Wednesday after the Oscars, when he picked up that award on Monday night or Sunday night, whenever it comes on Monday night, I jumped up and I started cheering. I was like, we got an Oscar winner. Oh, yeah.
No, that would be wonderful. That would be really great.
Yeah. And meanwhile, our friend Aaron got to see Benjamin Button yesterday.
And did he like it?
Oh, he said it was amazing.
Okay, cool.
I actually think she's going to be the front runner for Best Supporting. What's her name? I just submitted a request to her. I'll find her out her name, but the one that plays his mother, and she's been in many movies.
Okay, I know. Okay.
Shug, she played Shug in Hustle and Flow.
Okay, all right, I know who you're talking about.
And she was real good in Hustle and Flow too. She's one of those actresses that have been around for.
The first really positive thing that I've heard, because I've been reading a lot of mixed things about the film. So that's that's good to know. All right.
I've read two or three raves about it, actually.
Okay.
Like, raves about it. I mean, it's not as. They say there's no more touching ending than that. I've read a couple of people say that, but it's not rousing like Milk.
No, I don't think anything's going to be rousing like Milk. That's left for the rest of the year.
Taraji Henson is her name.
Okay.
The actress's name. They'll announce her as the winner of Best Supporting Actress. Mark my words.
Okay. It could work. It could go like that. It really could. Anything can happen.
I'll bet you $5 on it right now, Jason.
He's in a chat room. I mean,
once I get $5, I will put that up. You know, and Eric Roth is a hell of a screenwriter.
No, I like Eric Roth a lot, and I think this film has a lot of potential. And I think we can't rule out David Fincher for Best Director.
No, that's absolutely true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And this seems like a real change of pace for him, too. We need to talk to Aaron more about it when we have the patience. I mean, the time.
But there's another dark horse in here, and Nicholas Vargo brings up, and that's Slumdog Millionaire. That's a film that has a potential to be nominated for, like, director, screenplay, picture, possibly actors, actress.
Yeah,
I mean,
Vargo brings up Slumdog Millionaire more than he does his food when he had chicken pox. I mean, this is like, this kid is crazy about Slumdog.
No, everyone is. It's a film, and especially after last week, it's even taken on more relevant topic of conversation because of where it takes place, Mumbai. So everyone's talking about it right
now.
Yeah,
I know, and I'm sure it's a beautiful film, and God bless Nicholas. We love Nicholas, and I mean, I hope it gets some recognition, but for the Spirit Awards to ignore it.
Well, now, do they ignore it because it's not an American film? Does the Spirit only focus on American independent?
They have a foreign category.
It didn't get enough. All right, hold on a sec. Hold your horses here. Let me go to Best Foreign. Holy sheep shit. No, it didn't. The Class, which it won at Cannes, and Gomorrah, which is supposed to be incredible. I have the book on my pile right here. Secret of the Grain, Hunger, and Silent Light. No, you're right. It did not get... That's very telling right there. Okay.
Yeah, so interesting news. Jason's trying to criticize me now that the babes don't come to the show, so I'm saying, yeah, the only babe I get is Stormy Daniels. So
when you get someone like that, Jason, you don't need anyone else.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, so we will be back with you guys on, when will we be back? That's
when
a good question.
Sunday. aren't we going to be back Sunday, possibly? I mean,
what are we doing? Yes, we're going to be back Sunday. We will be back Sunday. And we're supposed to speak to the Benjamin Button people possibly this weekend, so we'll get a full hour on Benjamin Button for you real soon. And got some great shows upcoming, and as well as a Milk show with Rob Epstein, the director of The Times of Harvey Milk. And
right.
Great guests upcoming.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. December's looking up, so we already had a great night tonight. So,
a great night. And Jerry, thank you so much. I got out of my Mel Tillis concert just in time to make it here to conduct the show.
All right, cool.
Something you never thought would come out of Jamie's mouth.
No, I never thought that.
Yeah, at least not. Oh,
well, wait a second. Jason O'Brien's doing this thing about more butter. He was in the chat room on the anniversary show.
Let me tell you something. Like, with Stormy Daniels, you don't need more butter. Jay.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you guys back here. Stay tuned to our bulletin postings for exciting announcements about future guests. Jerry, thank you.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.